Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with Patrick Hogan of the Charleston Battery here in a few moments. And we'll also give away some battery tickets. Just came across my desk. We got some tickets to give away for the Charleston Battery. So we'll do that coming up here in just a little bit. Battery are home tomorrow night. They take on Charlotte Independence at Patriots Point. 7:30 start tomorrow night. You get your tickets online at charlestonbattery.com, but just wait a few minutes, because you will have a chance to win some tickets first tomorrow night's game. And then, if you don't win, head on over to charlestonbattery.com to get yourself some tickets. They're coming off a win this past Saturday at home against Hartford Athletic, 3-1. I was there, found out today, one of our someone from the sales team and her family were there. We were representing out at Patriots Point, and they got a big win against Hartford Athletic. And I was rooting for the Battery, even against my hometown team. Big win for Charleston. Now they try to add a second consecutive W against Charlotte Independence tomorrow night at home. We'll give away some tickets in just a little bit for that game. But joining us now is a member of the Charleston Battery, one of their defenders, Patrick Hogan, in his first year at the Battery. And he's with us now. Patrick, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Luke. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate the time. Let's go back to this past Saturday against the Hartford Athletic, a big 3-1 win in front of the home crowd. Take us through that game that you guys got a big win, beat the Athletic at home, and got back in the win column.
Yeah, exactly. We knew going into the game it was a big game for us, not just because Hartford was a great team, but we had some rough results before that, so we wanted to kind of correct it, and we're at home and with a crowd that was almost sold out, so it was actually a great experience, great fan base.
Just the second time this year that the Battery, you guys scored three goals in a game. I imagine as a defensive player that probably takes a little load off of your shoulders. It must be nice to get some offensive support like that, make it a little bit easier for you guys.
Absolutely, yeah. Usually when it's a 1-0 game or a 2-0 game or even a 0-0 game, it definitely adds more pressure to us. So if the front guys can keep scoring great goals like they did that weekend, it makes our job a lot easier.
Most goals scored in a home game this year. I just happened to be there as well. So I know it was a great crowd, but I kind of take the credit for it. Did Coach single me out after the game? I hope I got a venue because I show up to the game. You guys scored three goals, get a big win. I think it's only fair I take some of the credit in all this.
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say it's you, but I think you definitely had
I know I had a huge impact on your performance,
yes,
I'm sure.
Yes, you did. We saw you in the stands.
That's
and we were
right.
Like, you know what, we gotta score three great goals for Mr. Mora, and
that's right.
We did.
Yes, Patrick Hogan heard that I was there, and he said, "I'm going to play even better than usual tonight," and
exactly.
The Battery get that big win. But, sir, in all seriousness, what was it like to play in front of that crowd? First time this year that you guys were able to have, as you said, close to a sellout. First time full capacity was allowed. We've continually crept towards this point. I know you weren't with the Battery last year, but you were playing in college, and you know that was affected by COVID. What's it been like to go from dealing with the pandemic to now getting back in front of full stadiums?
Yeah, it's awesome. We usually get a good crowd at our college games, but obviously with the pandemic this past year, it was only family members. So to get back into a huge crowd, and especially Battery fans who are super passionate and extremely loud, it's an amazing feeling to hear them cheering in the stands, and it definitely helps. Like you said, the 12th man is always so beneficial for games, especially at home. So I'm glad we were able to give them a great game.
Yeah, so as you said, you played at UNC Charlotte, and you know, I was just talking about this earlier today with someone. I felt bad during the pandemic for high school seniors, for college seniors. You're missing out on a lot of those things that you're supposed to have before moving on to the next step. In your case, a professional career. So what was it like for you going back to a year ago, which, you know, maybe old news at this point, but what was it like for you finishing your career with UNC Charlotte and having it be, you know, disrupted essentially because of the pandemic last year?
Yeah, exactly. So we were supposed to have our season in the fall, and then it got pushed back to the spring. And that really kind of messed up. I graduated in the fall, so I actually started my master's certificate in the spring. And obviously the draft happened at the end of the fall, so that was kind of unfortunate that I had to play my senior season after the draft had already happened. But you can only control what you can control. So, you know, you just got to keep plugging away and keep working hard. And I know it was tough without any fans in the stands, but it was just nice after not playing for a year to be able to get out there and play with some of your closest buddies in college. So it was great that I was finally able to finish off my senior season.
What are you getting your master's in, or what did you get it in?
I got my master's certificate. So I'm like halfway done, but I got the certificate in data science and business analytics.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. Talking with Patrick Hogan from the Charleston Battery. So were you going through that process? Now, you signed with the Battery in May. Are you still going through that process? Like, are you trying to balance your professional soccer career while also finishing off your degree with trying to get your master's degree?
I'm taking a break right now. So I'm just focusing purely on soccer right now, but I think maybe next year or in another year, I'll probably start working on it again to fully finish my master's. So by the time I end my career, I'll have that in the repertoire for life after soccer.
Yeah, certainly a good plan. Talking with Patrick Hogan, you seem certainly like a smart guy. You signed with the Battery in May. What brought you here to the Battery just about 2 months ago now at this point? What brought you here?
Yes. The coach, Mike, showed some interest before my senior season, and I kind of had that in the back of my head going into my senior season, but I just wanted to focus on my soccer. And then towards the end of the season, we started looking for teams, and they needed a center back, and talked with my agent. And because I'm from Charleston, not far away, so I've been to Charleston. The city's fantastic. It's an amazing program. It's been successful for so many years. So it was kind of a no-brainer when they needed a center back and I was available.
Now that you're a resident here for the past 2 months and moving forward, what's been your favorite part about actually living in Charleston lately?
There's so many great things. I think the location we are right now is amazing. We're 2 minutes from our stadium. We're 5 minutes from downtown Charleston and King Street, and then we're 10 minutes from the beach. So everything is so close to us that you can really access all the great things in Charleston. So that's been really nice.
Yeah, I can imagine. Talking about Patrick Hogan from the Charleston Battery. As you said, you're from Charlotte originally, so you know you're not playing far from home. Family and friends, are they able to come down, and especially now that fans are coming back, have they been able to come see you play?
Yes, my family's been down to watch a couple games. Some of my friends have come down, and some of my old teammates have been to some games. So it's been really nice to have them supporting me from the sidelines. It's been awesome.
And you guys will play Charlotte Independence tomorrow night. We'll be giving away tickets to that coming up. But you played against Charlotte on the road last month. So, you know, does that game mean a little bit more to head back to that area to take on Charlotte?
Absolutely. It was definitely a little weird going into it because I've lived in Charlotte my entire life. I was born there. I played for UNC Charlotte. So, My mom said it perfectly. It was weird for her not to cheer for Charlotte, you know, when we went to play. But it was an interesting feeling. I've grown up. I played with Independence in the summer. So I know a lot of the guys. I know the coach. So I knew they're a great team, and it's a great game and a great competition to always play against them.
Yeah, and you'll be welcoming them in tomorrow night. I had a similar experience this past Saturday. I was talking about on the show last week, but I'm originally from Hartford, so I had the Battery against the Hartford Athletic. I was torn. Now, I did end up pulling for you guys, and again, that's why that's why I give myself a lot of credit for the victory. But I will say about being at that game, just sitting there, I was sweating just sitting there watching. It was so hot and humid. And soccer, I mean, you know, there's not a ton of stoppage. You're running up and down. Halftime's not that long. You got 90 minutes. You guys are obviously in great shape. But does the weather, I mean, you're from the South, so maybe not for you, but, you know, does it get to you? How hot, how humid, how tough is it endurance-wise just to get through these games?
Absolutely. You know, even if you're from these areas, the weather still takes a toll on you if you don't do the right things as hydration and all that and take your fitness seriously. But for teams like Hartford coming up from the north, like we know, you know, they might come out flying in the first, you know, 20 minutes, but towards the end of the game and towards the second half, I think that's kind of where we become in second gear because we're so used to it. We train in the morning where it's worse than I think at night. So by the time it starts getting darker, other teams start really like feeling the heavy legs and start cramping, and I think that's where we have an advantage against teams like that because we're so used to the humidity here. We train in it every single day, so we know what we have to do in those scenarios, and it's hard for other teams coming down to visit.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a nice home field advantage there, having the teams from the north come into this weather, certainly. I know the games, the home games usually start at 7:30. That was the case on Saturday, tomorrow night as well. I imagine part of that is to hope it cools down a little bit. But when you guys train, when you practice, you guys do that? Do you do that during the day when the sun is out, or do you do some of your training or practice, you know, like early morning, later in the day to try to avoid some of the weather?
Yeah, so we train around 9 a.m. every day. So 9 to 11. So we're, you would think that it's cool, but let me tell you, it's scorching by 9 a.m., especially at, like by the end of practice at 11. So I think it's cooler during the night games around 7:30 than it is around 9:30. Mm-hmm. So for us, going into the game, we feel extremely fit and our legs feel really good compared to maybe other teams who are like, holy crap, like this weather's terrible.
Yeah, I bet.
So I think that's a big advantage.
What's the recovery like just after a typical soccer game? I mean, what do you do after? How does your body feel afterwards? What do you do afterwards to make sure you're good to go moving forward?
Yeah, usually if I play full 90, usually my legs are pretty spent. So I try to take an ice bath the day after and a couple days afterwards just to get my legs under me, and then just whatever it is, like I need to eat right away, right after game. So I'll get like a protein shake in. They have protein shakes for us, and then we'll get food, and I try to eat right away and just hydrate as much as possible because the amount of weight that we lose in those games just purely from the sweat. So I'm losing like 9-10 pounds every game, and that's normal for most players. So it's just trying to gain back that water weight and that hydration so you can recover faster.
Do you have any of the analytics? Do you have any idea like how much you run in terms of like a mileage over the course of a soccer game?
Yes. Yeah, so I think I looked. We have GPSs, and that goes over the data. I was asking our guy who looks at all that stuff. I think the last game I ran, 7 miles or 7.5 miles.
Yeah, man.
So yeah, and I'm a center back, so you can imagine some of those midfielders,
right,
putting in some serious distance.
Yeah, and doing it over essentially a 90-minute period there as well. Talking about Patrick Hoeing from the Charleston Battery. Before we let you go, a couple last things. Number one, as I mentioned, I was there Saturday night. I've been to a couple of games this year. I've been to soccer games my whole life. I like the sport. I love going to the game, especially at Patriots Point. My one thing, though, and I was talking about this earlier with someone, these vuvuzelas, with everybody going crazy with these vuvuzelas, as a player, do you like it? Do you notice it? Do you hear it? What's your thought as a soccer player with this tradition of these plastic horns that everybody loves to blow at these games?
Yeah, exactly. I think, actually, we went down to Tampa, and it was really bad there. I remember the crowd was, I mean, it's hard on the field, too, because you have to scream extremely loud to try to, you know, like, talk to teammates near you. It's obviously a good atmosphere if you're the home team, but if you're the away team, it just, like, adds that extra pressure and the extra, oh, crap, like, the fans are crazy today. Like, if we let them off the hook, if we let them score, the momentum between the fans and the players, like, it's just a crazy atmosphere. I personally don't mind it. I think it makes the game more fun. And even if I'm in an away game and the fans are extremely loud, I relish that. I like it if we can try to shut up the fans by scoring a goal or winning away from home. And then obviously at home, the louder the crowd, they're obviously cheering for us. So knowing that they're cheering for us, it's a great feeling. And honestly, it helps us push over the edge and get that ball over the white line.
All right. We'll allow it. I won't start a campaign to try to remove those things.
I could understand how it's annoying, though. I can see how it's annoying.
Before we let you go, talking with Patrick Hogan from the Charleston Battery, appreciate all your time. Before we let you go, as you mentioned, you're very familiar with the Charlotte Independence squad. They're coming to town tomorrow. Just give us a scouting report. What should we expect for those going out to the game tomorrow night? What should we expect to see in this matchup with the Independence tomorrow?
It's going to be a hard-fought battle. Every time we play them, it's a little chippy, and there's definitely going to be a lot of fouls, I would say. I think their front three is extremely electric going forward. So for us, it's going to be dealing with Dane Kelly and Pereira and all that pace that they have up top. And then for us, I think it's just finishing off our chances like we did last game and making sure that we start off the game on the front foot and high pace and keeping the ball and letting them move, making them move. Because even from Charlotte to down here, the weather is much more humid down here, I think. So if we can get them moving the ball and get them chasing the ball for a bit and tiring them out, I think that'll be key for us.
It's the Battery and the Charlotte Independence tomorrow night at 7:30. Stay tuned. We'll be giving away tickets in just a moment for that game at Patriots Point. But he's Patrick Hogan, a defender of the Charleston Battery. And appreciate the time, Patrick, and joining us, breaking it all down. Best of luck to you and the team tomorrow night and the rest of the season.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, pleasure's all ours.
I hope to see you at the game tomorrow.
That's right. And, hey, if they win, if you guys win and I'm there, I'm taking the credit once again.
Absolutely. we'll gladly give it to you.
Perfect. My guy, Patrick Hogan, appreciate it, from the Charleston Battery. Anytime I go in the building, if the team wins, I'm walking out of there with all the credit. The guys on the field making the plays, maybe they deserve a little of the credit. Maybe just a little bit. Bring your vuvuzelas. Go out and root on the Battery tomorrow. It's always a fun night at Patriots Point. I enjoy it. Now, again, Saturday, as I said, it was real sticky that night. It was real humid, muggy, 86% humidity. Felt like 90 degrees. I felt bad for the players. I was sitting in the stands sweating. I thought, oh, my goodness. Imagine running 7.5 miles out there, very few breaks or stoppages for 90 minutes. I was sweating, eating my pizza. I thought, oh, my God, I couldn't imagine playing a soccer game in this weather. So, you know, the games are at 7:30 when you hope it's a little bit cooler, but the games are also quick. That's a great thing about soccer. You get a game in there with 2 hours. So you bring the family out, 7:30 start, you're out of there at 9:30. Right? It's not that you go to a baseball game, it could be 4 hours. You could be, if your kids want to stay at the end of the baseball game, right, you're leaving at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. Got to get them in bed. So that's the nice thing about the Battery and just soccer in general. They get you in and out. 2 hours, you get yourself a couple of drinks, you go grab a pizza from the food truck. It's a fun time. Bring maybe a sweat rag with you and go root on the Batteries. They take on the Charlotte Independence tomorrow night. Should be another great one at Patriots Point. You can get tickets online at charlestonbattery.com, but how about this? We got a pair of tickets to give away. We'll do it right now after our conversation with Pat. Third caller now. Joe, grab their email. And we could also grab their phone number. And we'll send you the tickets virtually for the game tomorrow night, 7:30 start at Patriots Point tomorrow. We got to give these tickets away. Third caller now will send you the tickets, 843 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller now, you get two tickets to the Batteries game tomorrow night. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, this big concern for Clemson, is it really a concern? Or is it really even a story? We'll get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time last segment from Patrick Hogan of the Charleston Battery, humoring me along the way. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, just search ESPN Radio Charleston. You can find the show on demand by going online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, find the podcast there. Or if you download our free app by searching ESPN Charleston in the App Store, you can not only listen to the show live there on the app, but also on demand. The podcasts are available through the app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store today. The bosses told me the numbers yesterday for the app. We're doing very well. People are downloading that sucker like Farmville back in the day. So appreciate you. The app has been wildly popular since we introduced it. So if you haven't downloaded it yet, go out and get it in the App Store, ESPN Charleston, and you can listen through that app from anywhere in the world and also find the show on demand. We'll get to Clemson in just a moment, but we spent the pretty much the entire first hour talking about Oklahoma and Texas potentially joining the SEC. I thought this was interesting. Chris Felica, Bear, as he's known on game day, tweeted this out, that since 2010, winning percentage amongst Power 5 teams since 2010. Earlier I was talking about which SEC teams, if you had to. This is all hypothetical. It would never happen. But if you had to remove two SEC teams to make spots for Oklahoma and Texas, which teams would you remove? And I said Missouri would be number one on my list. And if I thought of a number two, Vanderbilt. Yeah, I think Missouri I would say number one. But I said Missouri and Vanderbilt. Now, this comes down to football specifically, but Felica put out winning percentage since 2010 for all Power 5 teams. Missouri is 29th. South Carolina, because I said they would be probably fourth on my list, they're 31st in winning percentage. And then you get to Texas at 33, behind those two. Now, those numbers are a little skewed, right? Because South Carolina, that's going back to 2010 and includes the run they had with Spurrier. If you go back to the last 7 years, a little bit different. South Carolina has had one winning season in their conference in the last 7 years, right? The record has not been as good the last 7 years. But if you include the last few great years of Steve Spurrier and date it 2010, then, South Carolina looks much better. 31st best winning percentage since 2010. But nonetheless, since 2010, Missouri and South Carolina both ahead of Texas while playing in a tougher conference. So my point being, in this hypothetical situation that, again, would never actually occur. But if you were saying, hey, Missouri, move out of the way, here comes Texas, it's funny because Missouri has actually performed better than Texas while playing mostly in a tougher conference the past decade. But we know it's not about wins and losses. It's about brand, money, all that sort of stuff. And Texas carries a bigger stick than Missouri and, yes, even the Gamecocks nationally. But we know, performance-wise, it's nothing special. You're going to bend over backwards to try to get them in the conference. It's not because of the great success they've had on the field. By the way, congratulations to our winner. I meant to mention this earlier. But our winner, George in Mount Pleasant, winning a pair of tickets to the Batteries game tomorrow night as they welcome in Charlotte Independence. If you did not win, don't worry. You can go online to charlestonbattery.com and still get your tickets for tomorrow night's game, a 7:30 start. They then go on the road for a couple and won't be home again for almost 3 weeks. About 2 weeks. So head on out tomorrow night to see them while they're in town at Patriots Point. Tickets online at charlestonbattery.com for the Battery and the Charlotte Independents tomorrow night. All right, I teased this earlier. Let me actually get to it, this whole thing with Clemson. Their portion of the ACC Media Days, is going on today. They had their own Media Day on Tuesday, Clemson did. Dabo talked with everybody. And then they're now in Charlotte. Speaking of Charlotte, they're there today for their portion of the ACC Media Days, which wraps up today. And we'll see what Dabo and company have to say. DJ's over there, and we'll see what anything comes from it. But I've been hearing a lot of talk lately, and I know they were asked about it. Dabo was, and Tony Elliott was on Tuesday, about Clemson's backup quarterback. And this has been a big topic. And if that's the biggest concern, then you're doing really well. If the biggest concern for a team is, yeah, but what about their backup quarterback? Because you hope you never have to see that backup quarterback. Now, the concern for Clemson, I get why there is concern. Because with the injury to their actual backup, their options now behind DJ are a couple of inexperienced guys, right? You're going to have to rely on, you know, like a walk-on or potentially like Hunter Renfrow back in the day used to take snaps at quarterback. Right? You're almost going to have to rely on your emergency quarterback. The options behind DJ are not good. And I've heard a lot of talk over this week and maybe the last 2 weeks that, well, if DJ gets hurt, there goes Clemson's season. Uh-oh, they don't have a backup quarterback. And this turned into a conversation about how Dabo doesn't like the transfer portal and people saying, well, maybe they should go into the transfer portal and go find a quarterback to come be a backup for DJ. And these are all fair thoughts and concerns, but my whole point is, couldn't we say this about everyone? It's like the people that are fearful of everything. Why spend time worrying about something that you may never have to worry about? In fact, if you listen to the show, you know Tom Petty is my favorite musician. And he had a great line from his Wildflowers album in 1994 of, he sang, most things I worry about never happen anyway. And after he passed away, his drummer got that tattooed on his chest. And it's a great line. And we all know people like that that are always stressing about everything. They're worried about something that the possibility of it happening is so minor. And so it's like, why even waste your breath, your energy? Why stress over something that you may never have to worry about? See, I'm the opposite, me personally. And this will frustrate some people in my life, but I'm the opposite. I'm not going to worry about something until we get there. Why am I going to waste my time worrying about it if it's not going to happen? So I'll cross that bridge when I get there. And I look at Clemson the same way, worrying about their backup quarterback. Look, if DJ gets injured, okay, then I'll be worried. And you may say, well, you have to be prepared. You're going to get yourself caught in a bad situation. But in this case, when we're talking about football and a backup quarterback, you can make this case for any team. Why are we sitting here worrying about a backup quarterback? Because Georgia, if JT Daniels gets injured, sorry, for Georgia, there goes your national championship. You're going to have to go back to Stetson Bennett, who's a walk-on and was lousy last year. It's why he lost his job. JT Daniels, I believe, is the best quarterback in the SEC. If he gets injured, sorry, Georgia, there goes your national championship because you're not winning one with Stetson Bennett, your backup quarterback. For Alabama, we haven't seen Bryce Young yet, but I think he's going to have a great year. If he gets injured, Alabama's backup is a true freshman. Now, sure, he's a four-star recruit. I'm sure he's going to be very talented as well, but he's coming right out of high school, and if he has to get thrust into an SEC game, that probably will cost Alabama the national championship. UNC, Sam Howell, right? Great quarterback. We think Sam Howell, UNC, could have a really good year this year. Breaking news, if Sam Howell gets injured, UNC is in big trouble. They're not going to win because both of their quarterbacks are freshmen who haven't played. But not only that, they're not as good as Sam Howell. That's why they're the backup. Stetson Bennett is not as good as JT Daniels. Alabama's backup quarterback, that true freshman, is not as good as Bryce Young. Go to every school. That's why they're a backup. And they probably don't have a lot of playing experience. Another portion, another reason why they're a backup. NFL, we could do the same exercise. The Packers are going through it right now. Well, if Aaron Rodgers doesn't show up, we're in big trouble. Yes. Right? If Tom Brady gets injured, the Buccaneers are not winning a Super Bowl. If Patrick Mahomes gets injured, the Chiefs are not winning a Super Bowl. So is this a concern for Clemson? Sure, but it's a concern for everybody. And I guess it speaks to how good Clemson is set up that this is the number one thing I'm hearing about Clemson the past week or two. On a national level and even locally, from fan sites, online, people in the national media, oh, Clemson, they better hope DJ doesn't get injured. We could say that for every team. I think the Chiefs hope that Patrick Mahomes doesn't get injured this year. I think Georgia hopes that JT Daniels doesn't get injured this year. And if these teams had a really good backup quarterback, he probably wouldn't be a backup quarterback, especially today where guys can move very freely. And if that backup quarterback believes, hey, I'm every bit as good as this starter, he's not going to sit there behind that starter. He's going to transfer to another school. It'd be like saying getting in a car accident would be a bad thing. Yes, no kidding. But when you're driving down the road, well, you should be a defensive driver, but you shouldn't have crippling fear that, oh, boy, I may get into a car accident today. Just like you can't worry that, oh boy, right, DJ may get injured this year. Yeah, it's a physical game. Quarterbacks may get injured. And when they do, then you can scramble. You may be in trouble. But I've heard this conversation going on. You could say it about any team. If you lose your starting quarterback, breaking news, you're in big trouble. Because most teams, other than Oklahoma, who keeps bringing in five-star recruits at the quarterback position, five-star after five-star, they're probably the only team that if they lose their starter, they still have a guy they feel comfortable in. Yeah, we'll be fine. Most teams in the NFL, college football, you could even go down to high school. You lose your starting quarterback, you're in trouble. And by the way, we're also protecting quarterbacks now more than ever before. Trevor Lawrence was always fine. Justin Fields took a shot in the sternum and still finished that game, even when they do take big hits. So, again, worrying about something that may never happen is another thing that I don't want to spend the energy doing. Just like you could, every time you get behind the wheel, you could get into a car accident. But I'm not spending my days stressing about that. Like, oh, I have to drive home today. What happens if there's a car, if I get hit, if I'm in a car accident? Well, I got to get home. So I got to go out there and drive. I'm not going to sit here and stress about something that may, knock on wood, right? Hopefully never happen in my life. You hope DJ never gets injured. And if he does, yeah, you could be in trouble. But I think we can make that case for every football team. The quarterback is the most important position. You lose your quarterback, yeah, you're going to be in trouble. My biggest concerns for Clemson, and by the way, that's why I think it's not worth talking about. I'm tired of turning on the TV and, oh, Clemson, well, they have a very great concern of the backup quarterback. Okay. Well, you hope he never sees the field. And I get this is talking season and, you know, filling time and whatnot. But my biggest concerns for Clemson would be, offensively, replacing all the talent. You're replacing your star quarterback, your top two rushers, your top three receivers. You're having a quarterback step in for the first time. I know he played last year, but this is a different role as the guy. Right? You're replacing a couple of, you have the 14th most inexperienced offensive line. That's where my concern is. Not, well, what about the backup quarterback? No, it's replacing all that production. And I think they will. And I think DJ will be just fine, but that would be my larger concern instead of, yeah, but the backup quarterback is pretty inexperienced. And my other concern would be on defense, the fact that look at the last 2 years. They allowed 42 points against LSU, 47 to Notre Dame, 49 against Ohio State. That's a greater concern for me for Clemson. I'm not worrying about the backup quarterback. You hope you never have to worry about that this year. But what I am worried about is come playoff time or week one against Georgia, how will that defense hold up? Because that's something you're going to have to worry about. Because Georgia's on the schedule and Clemson will be in the playoff this year. And you're going to have to go up against an Ohio State or an Alabama or somebody in Georgia in the playoff once again and have to slow them down. And the last 2 years on those big stages, the defense hasn't looked so good. That's what I want to worry about because those are things that are actually going to happen. On offense, you're going to have to replace your top three pass catchers, top two rushers, and your quarterback. On defense, you're going to have to slow down at Georgia and come playoff time some other top program. But I don't want to spend time sitting here wondering or worrying or fearing about, well, the backup quarterback is very inexperienced. They're going to have to go to a walk-on or a freshman or somebody who's never played before. Every team has to worry about the backup quarterback, and they hope they never see him on the field. I don't care about it. I'm a little tired of hearing about it, too. Right? I have bigger concerns for Clemson than the backup quarterback. You hope you never have to see him. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Was it Dom is with us? Dom, what's going on? How are you?
Hello, Luke. How are you doing? It's great hearing the discussion about college football. Just can't wait for the season to start.
Yes, you and me both.
I've been in the car for a while, and I've heard you. I heard you teasing. You know, what does Clemson have to worry about? I really thought the answer was going to be that they have to play Georgia on September 4th. But just as a Georgia fan, wanted to get that one out there. But you're absolutely right about the backup quarterback. There's very few teams that have a second guy that would hop in without any problem. But speaking of Georgia, though, it probably wouldn't be Stetson Bennett this year if something happens to JT Daniels. It would probably be Carson Beck or Brock Vandegrift, who's a freshman that are obviously much more talented there. But the other concern for Clemson, you know, and I don't want to jinx Georgia or anyone, but, you know, if Clemson loses that first game, they could be on the outside looking in come playoff time, assuming you've got an Alabama, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. Those three teams won their conferences. You know, Clemson might be in the fifth slot instead of one of the top four. Any concern with
Yes, I've had that concern. Now, we had Michael Collins on the show last week who covers Georgia for FanSided, so I thought he would come at it from that perspective as well. But when I asked him if he thought that game would have a large impact on the playoff, he did not think so. I do believe that Clemson, for the points you bring up, if you lose that game, because their schedule is so weak afterwards that you can't really make up for it, the Tigers have what is ranked as the 72nd toughest schedule, including Georgia. If you take away that Georgia game, their strength of schedule is probably close to 100 out of 130 teams. So depending on what the other teams do, you know, they could have build a stronger resume than Clemson or have better wins on that resume. But at the same time, to kind of speak out of both sides of my mouth, when push comes to shove, I think the committee will do whatever they can to get Clemson in there. So it will take quite a bit from those other programs to really be, say, head and shoulders above Clemson to take away a spot from them in the playoff.
Fair point. Yeah, they've built up some brand equity, obviously, over the last several years. But that's why we can't wait for college football season to start, Luke.
Yes, you and me both. Hey, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate you listening. 6 weeks from today is the first Citadel game. Now, we have that Hawaii-UCL. Super Dave did not update us on the countdown. I was very surprised. But I believe that's the Saturday before that first Thursday. I think that's week zero, I believe. So, anyway, 6 weeks from today is that first Thursday night. But I guess there'll be games that prior weekend. So long story short, we're less than 42 days away from the start of college football, and I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, for me, I do think that Clemson-Georgia game's a big deal. But Michael Collins, who you know covers Georgia, so I thought maybe he'd be a little biased and say, oh, yeah, if Clemson loses to Georgia, right, they're done. And he said, no, I don't think it has a big impact. You know, I think they'll have enough of an opportunity the rest of the year to make their case. If that's their only loss, depending on what other teams do, again, I think the committee will do what they can to get Clemson in there. But the whole point being, it's going to be hard outside of Georgia to stack up quote-unquote good wins. Because even with Georgia, Clemson only has the 72nd toughest schedule in the country. Outside of Georgia, what would be considered a good win this year? At NC State, right? I mean, what, going to Syracuse? I mean, maybe if South Carolina has a good year, beating them in their building would, by the end of the year, be considered a good win. So I do think that Georgia game is big for both sides. I think it's big for Georgia as well because you can only afford so many losses, even to good teams. And playing in the SEC, I think Georgia's really good this year, right? But you got to get past Florida, and you never know. An Auburn on the road could sneak up on you. You know, playing in that quote-unquote gauntlet, you never know what could happen week to week. Then if you lose, say, in the SEC title game, that could be your second or third loss, depending on what else happens. So I do think it's a big game. Michael Collins disagreed with me. But I think that is a big one. And that's why I made the case on the show, I think it was earlier this week, first couple of weeks of college football are big. Alabama has Miami and Florida in their first three games. Ohio State goes to, they play Minnesota, the most experienced team in the country, with a new quarterback for Ohio State week one. Even Notre Dame, if you think they're a playoff team this year, they have to take on Florida State with Mackenzie Milton. They'll be better this year. Notre Dame will have a new quarterback. You get them week one. Florida State has a lot of returnees this year. Even somebody like Texas, who I don't think will be participating in the playoff, but I think Texas loses week one to Louisiana. New coach for Texas, new quarterback, one of the most inexperienced teams this year in terms of returnees. Louisiana has the third most returners. They had a good program last year, good coach. I think they beat Texas week one. I think there could be a few shakeups in September. And Georgia-Clemson isn't necessarily a shakeup. One of those teams has to lose, but I think that's another one of those of the important games early in the college football season. Coming up, Nick Saban, speaking of Alabama and college football and such. Nick Saban had an indirect response to Deion Sanders yesterday, and we'll get to that. It's the More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, Nick Saban with a response to Deion Sanders and that whole spectacle. We'll get to that coming up here on the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Last segment was talking about Clemson and the backup quarterback. Look, backup quarterback, of course, it's always a concern. It's a concern because you would have to be using your backup quarterback. That's concerning because it means your starting quarterback, there's some issue with him. My whole point being, we can make that case for every team. So it's not worth spending the time talking about it. That's an issue for all teams. Is Clemson's backup quarterback worse than some other backup quarterbacks? Sure. But you never want to go to your backup quarterback for any team. That's not good. And it also may never happen. So I know a lot of this job is talking hypotheticals, but that's another one of those that we're talking about. Well, if DJ gets injured and then they have to go to the backup, well, they're going to be in trouble. That's a couple of step process. Yeah, if he gets injured and then they have to go to the backup and then he doesn't play very well. And the hypotheticals I prefer are if they win or lose this game. And because we know they're playing that game, there's going to be a winner or loser. We don't know if DJ's ever going to have to come out of a game this year, for injury at least. So yesterday we talked about Deion Sanders. I thought he made a complete jerk of himself at Media Days. Then it turns out we get the story yesterday that Deion also barred somebody from that same newspaper from covering the program because he wrote a factual story about the top recruit for Jackson State being involved in a domestic violence case. And Deion Sanders said, that's it. That guy can't talk to any of our players or coaches again, just for reporting the facts. So Deion this week has shown himself to be a real jerk. I think that's a pretty jerky thing to do.
So in other words, nothing's changed since his playing days.
Yeah, for prime time. So, because first off, your recruit did something bad. And then secondly, the guy's just trying to do his job reporting facts in the paper. And now you're saying, yep, sorry, you can't cover us anymore. What you're suggesting is any bad news about us, right? Even if it's true, we don't want you to report it. That's garbage. You need to have the free press. Anyways, all that said, Deion made a fool of himself because a reporter called him Deion and he stormed off of his own media day for the conference. So that's it. I'm walking out. Nick Saban was asked about this because Deion Sanders said, you wouldn't call Nick Saban Nick. He'll cuss you out. I deserve the same credit. He's won 4 games. Saban has won, more national titles than Deion's won games, but nonetheless, he should be on his same level. Here is Nick Saban yesterday at SEC Media Days. He was asked about this. Here is what Saban himself had to say.
There's been some talk in the college football world about how we should address head coaches. If it was up to you, what is your preference? Is it Nick, head coach Nick? Nick, how would you like to be addressed?
Look, I respond to just about anything, and I've been called just about everything. So not something that's really important to me, but I think everybody should have the opportunity to sort of create or make the way their expectation is of how they get addressed. And it's not something that's really that significant to me.
Hi, Saban.
That still makes me laugh from December. That woman saying, hi, Saban. Anyways, Nick's saying there, and we already knew this because people call him Nick all the time, or just Saban. He doesn't care. Deion shouldn't either. By the way, it's your first name. He's not calling you a nickname, even though he loves his nickname. He's not calling you a derogatory term, not making fun of you. It's your first name. He called you Deion, and that was a problem. And as we already knew, but Saban confirmed it, he doesn't care. Call Nick whatever he wants. He's still going to give you a respectful answer, as you should. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll get back to the Texas-Oklahoma SEC talk coming up next hour. But as part of that conversation earlier, I was talking about if you had to clear room in the SEC, just say, hypothetically speaking, this would never happen because of potential lawsuits and contracts and everything, but let's just say you could only have 14 teams and the SEC would rather have Oklahoma and Texas. Which two teams would get cut out? I think I settled on Missouri and Vanderbilt. But I was considering all sports. Now, Henry on Twitter said if they were to kick two teams out of the SEC, it would be Missouri and possibly us, he says, as a Gamecock fan, so South Carolina. As he says, just because Vanderbilt and Mississippi State are original members, I also think Arkansas would be considered. Yeah, I did think Arkansas. If it was because of the Big Three or total athletic department success, South Carolina would be fine. We have one of the best women's basketball teams, soccer, golf, and tennis as well in the country. Our total athletic department is better than Vanderbilt, Missouri, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Kentucky, and is on par with Tennessee and LSU. I tried to consider the Big Three, but I do know, being a Connecticut fan, a UConn fan, I went through this conference realignment. Big East was breaking up, and UConn was looking for a home. They wanted to go to the Big Ten. And the Big Ten chose Rutgers over UConn. Now, part of it was because of Rutgers' connection to New York. But you could also make the case they're New Jersey, UConn's Connecticut. They're just both bordering states. Pick your poison. And yes, New Jersey's closer connected to New York than Connecticut. But, you know, you could also make the case Connecticut would give you the New York connection a little bit, at least. But the reason why the Big Ten took Rutgers was simply because football. UConn's a great basketball program. But they said, yeah, football, you're lacking. We'd rather have Rutgers. Rutgers had a better program at the time. So in the case of this, I think it would come down to football. And if that's the case, and we're only considering football, you're definitely cutting Vanderbilt. And then maybe Arkansas? They're similar to South Carolina? The Gamecocks wouldn't be too far from that list, though. At least not now. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.